You are listening to Southend City Radio.
Welcome to Sleep and Thrive, the podcast dedicated to helping you unlock the power of a good night's sleep. In this fast-paced world, where sleep often takes a back seat to our daily demands, we'll explore the fascinating science, practical tips, and inspiring stories that highlight the critical role sleep plays in our physical and mental well-being. Joining us on this journey to help us understand it all is Essex's very own Dan Everson. Hello, Dan.
Hello, hello. Thanks so much. Welcome again.
Good to have you here. Now, you are an adult sleep coach. You're an expert in sleep. How much sleep have you had today?
Enough to be called an expert, quote unquote. Or at least a student. A student of sleep.
A student of sleep. Oh, yeah. We're all studying that in some way, shape or form, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. And of course, dependent on how much sleep we get, depends on how good a student we are, whether we turn up on time with the right books.
You've gone from being F minus, I suppose, to where would you say you are now in the graduation?
I'd say I'm hovering around a strong C plus.
Okay, yeah,
I know
that's
the
good.
Grading has changed within the school systems, but yeah
I'm a C plus. What they are now,
but I'm a strong C plus. Room for improvement. Must pay attention more. Easily distracted. I think that'd be my report.
Easily, yeah, same. I'm definitely in that camp. Talks too much would be my usual report in that scenario. But this new podcast we're doing will delve into some of the practical tips and things you've learned in your own experience and in your experience in helping others.
Yeah, certainly will. Experience around sleep and terrible sleep and poor sleep for more than 15 years. Dive into the science, the studies, the research, our own experiences, hopefully lots of relatable strategies and tips, and some of the lighter side, because some of it can be quite doomsday and dark with relation to health implications, but try and look at it through more a positive eyes, if you like, to ensure that people can sort of be educated and then empower them to make some positive changes and then hopefully elevate their sleep health.
Excellent. Shed a bit of light on sleep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but not too much light after a certain time.
Otherwise, it'll ruin the whole routine and it all goes out. So our first topic of discussion, there's so many elements to sleep, which we'll try and cover through the whole podcast, all sorts of different bits involved in. I'm sure you've had experience in all sorts of areas, but what are we going to... Where do we start with all of this?
Okay, well, we've thrown a dart at the board and it's hit. Relaxation is going to be the first one. Certainly a pillar, a vital pillar within... the daily routines of good sleep hygiene or good sleep health, relaxation is right up there with this. If anyone was having trouble with their sleep or wanted to improve it, this is a good area to focus on.
So relaxation. I mean, you say the words relaxation, I'm instantly sort of hearing like a chime and smelling incense and just picturing myself in some wonderful beach scene. What's relaxation mean to you?
It's probably going to mean that we're going to fall asleep throughout this episode. One of us is going to fall asleep, because if we start to talk nice and slow and just understand, slow it all down, it's going to become,
Meditation things, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be a sleep story. Yeah. We'll probably cover those things throughout. But for me, relaxation means... just switching from the 100 miles an hour hamster wheel of crazy demand, stress-filled distraction, which most of us are on that roller coaster day in, day out, by choice or not. For many people, it's not always their particular choice. And so for me, it just means flipping from that 100 mile an hour roller coaster to a slower roller coaster, but the child's roller coaster, which goes around quite slowly.
No
barrel rolls. So it's the same roller coaster from the daytime. We're just going to go round the barrel roll and ignore that. For me, it just means flipping from that crazy hamster wheel into a more a more relaxed environment where we're going to look after ourself and we're not going, we're going to ease ourselves into a relaxed state and a sleep mode, because that's what our brains need. It needs to understand that we're transitioning from one to the other. We need that. Can't do it in a second. You can't just go 100 miles an hour and land.
Just press a button and be relaxed.
Yeah, no.
Really well.
Excuse me. Yeah.
No matter how good the joysticks are.
Yeah. Don't matter how much incense. Don't matter how much candles and woo-woo music you have in the background. It's worth taking some time.
So we're going to go from the Big Dipper to the teacups.
Oh, don't mention teacups. I feel nauseous just thinking about them.
They're the worst.
Yeah.
So what are some of your, when you your own self go to bed, how do you relax? And what are some of the sort of common themes that you find other people would do as part of their relaxation routine?
Well, I find lots of people do different things on different days at different times for different reasons. And this isn't about, this is the way everyone should do it and my way is the best way, because everyone has, of course, different sleep needs, and they'll have preferences for bedtimes, and they'll have different access to different things, and also the amount of time they have to wind down can be different depending on work and personal life and other things, other commitments and pressures they have. So for me, this is not a one way to do it. This is just the way I do it. And I don't do it every night because I'm a shift worker and I have three young children, and, you know, I try to be social and all the other reasons why sometimes it doesn't go quite as planned. But I certainly try and do a few things at a minimum for relaxation. And then if I'm more aware of it and I have more time, then I do a few others. So would you like me to give you what I do?
Yeah, let's go through a day in the life or a night in the life of Dan Emerson.
Okay.
Bearing in mind, of course, this particular example, you're not about to go and put a fire out in the middle of the night.
No. Okay, so all being well, the best case scenario is that in the last 90 minutes before bed, I will commence a few different things. And again, this doesn't happen every time, but this is the best case scenario. This is what I do, and this is what happens. So about 90 minutes beforehand, I start to, you know, an alarm goes off on my phone, because many people don't have an alarm to tell them to wind down, or alarm to go to bed.
Alarm to get up, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay, right, yeah.
So I normally set an alarm, like a reminder on my phone, that it's time to start to wind down, because I try and have a semi-regimented bedtime. So I understand 90 minutes before that, alarm will go off, a reminder for me to commence my wind down. Now, for me, my wind down normally occur. Things, some of these are so habitual that I'm not even aware of them. For instance, there's a whole 3-2-1 type rule of thumb, which is 3 hours before bed, you know, no exercise, no food, for instance.
Okay,
Then 2 hours before bed, no work, nothing that's going to be stressing you out, replying to emails or text or getting into conversations which are going to ramp you up.
Yeah, make you think more about things, get your brain firing.
And the last hour, like 3-2-1, and then the one represents, you know, like screen time and things that you're going to be consuming which are going to maybe hinder your quality of your sleep. So
binge watching a murder mystery.
Listen to this podcast.
Who did it? Oh god. Yeah.
Yeah, so I, you know, whilst that 3-2-1 is in place to a degree, that's like a bare minimum for me. If it's all bets are off, right, 3 hours no exercise and food, 2 hours no working, 1 hour try and put down the pick-me-ups, lots of that relates around screen time and light exposure in the last hour, so I can really wind down. But a best case scenario is 90 minutes beforehand, I will do things like lay out the clothes for tomorrow, lay out some books and things for my morning routine, you know, put a drink out for the morning. I would make a hot beverage, you know, normally completely caffeine-free, something which I find relaxing, but not everyone likes herbal teas.
Oh, right, yeah. I was going to say Horlicks, really. That's the classic, isn't it?
Yeah, Horlicks. That's a classic. There's also things like, you know, wearing comfortable clothes. I would change from, you know, into something more comfortable and relaxing. Again, these are all just cues to the brain that we are now preparing for sleep.
Yeah, you're kind of telling your own mind, this is it now.
All the things that normally keep people from going to bed. Oh no, if I get up now, I'm going to have to lock the door, put the dog out, you know, do this, make that bag, make sure this is sorted. So I try and do all that way before, even close to the bedtime. So literally when it's, I say go, I'm going and there's nothing else to do. So these 90 minutes beforehand,
you're preparing for your next day as much as you are
Sure.
Unwinding from your previous day.
Yeah, locking the house up, you know, making sure there's other things sorted out, making sure the cars are locked. These real rubbish admin type things that you wouldn't always think about doing. So that happens 90 minutes beforehand. You know, take my contacts out, put my glasses on. And from then, it then goes into a number of other things like wearing blue light blocking glasses. I'll put those on about 60 minutes before bed.
Oh, okay. Right,
and they reduce the blue light, which we find is in, of course, natural light, essentially artificial lights, phones, TVs, screens, essentially. And we'll come on to why that affects us so much. But I'll put the blue light blocking glasses on. I'll dim the lights in the house. I normally don't have the heating on this time of night. You know, this is when I want to be cooling. I want to cool my core temperature. I don't want to warm it up with like the fire on and the heating on and loads of layers.
Oh, okay, right.
So certainly, you want to be comfortable, but you don't want to be over warm.
Too comfortable.
Yeah, you don't want to be too comfortable. You fall asleep on the sofa. So that happens in a sort of 60 minutes. I might write down a few plans for the next day or on my phone. You know, we're into an hour before bed, but that can be flexible. So making sure that I've sent a text or I'll check my plan for tomorrow, check the weather, for instance, whatever you want to do. And I'll try and, again, another reminder on my phone to put it away, put it on charge. So yeah. Now about 60 minutes before bed.
Yeah.
For me, that's what I do. So that's all away. And then the last sort of 45 minutes or so, I might watch an episode or something with my wife, because we don't watch a great deal of TV, and it might go against some of the things I'm saying, but I'm a practical person. I'm not going to say no more TVs for the rest of the time, no more alcohol, no more caffeine.
As you never watch any TV. No. Never have any caffeine.
I'm very practical to say, yeah. You know, we can still enjoy these things. Depends on where your sleep hygiene is at. You know, with my sleep hygiene, I know that it's good, and I can, you know, I can take an episode of TV. I've got blue light blocking glasses on, and I'm winding down. Everything else is done. My mind's not racing.
Got the groovy shades on. We're ready to watch.
Yeah. And then in the last sort of 30 minutes before bed, once the TV goes off, it'll just be, I'm sometimes do like a meditation.
Just a few minutes.
Again, for me, it depends on what you need and how much you need to relax. I'm someone that's already, of course, spent some time relaxing and winding down. So I'll do some breathing exercises or some light meditation for, say, 5-10 minutes away from my bedroom. And then literally when it's time to go to bed, I know I'm just going to go upstairs, brush my teeth, walk into my bedroom environment, and go to sleep straight away. You know, there's nothing else occurs.
So you're not doing any of that in the bedroom?
No.
You're doing that the last thing in the bedroom, which gets it.
And sometimes if, you know, I was pushed, I would read maybe for 5 minutes. But which lots of people do that, and that's not a bad thing
to do it.
But
always sends me to sleep, to be honest.
Yeah,
reading a book.
Have a little read of
no
something.
No matter how good the book is, it sends me to sleep.
A physical book. And it's worth noting that that's not on a Kindle or on a device, or, you know, something.
Nothing with light.
No. No, it's a physical book. Again, there is still a bedside lamp that requires that. So depends on your tolerances, I suppose, and sensitivities to light. Depends on what you want to do. But that's my routine. In a very long, short answer.
So that's what you do. And obviously you live with a family, wife, kids and everything. So it's not always possible to do that exact routine.
No, that's the best case scenario. Like I say, if all bets are off, it's break emergency glass. And it might just be try and put my phone away half an hour before bed and not strangle anyone. That might be the break glass emergency. And it, like I say, it's so similar to many people. They wouldn't, you know, it's hard to have a habitual routine of 7 nights a week. You do the same thing from 90 minutes out. For most people, like, I work 2 nights a week, or there's, you know, one of the children might be ill, or their partner might be ill, or they've got a social event. You can never say this is what I do every single night. That would just be non-practical.
Yeah.
It just needs to have an understanding that I need, for instance, me, I need a short period of time to wind down before bed to get good sleep quality, but someone else might need longer.
Yeah.
Some people might need to do a stretching exercise or breathing meditation within their bedroom. Some people might want to read for a lot longer because they enjoy reading, and also it relaxes them. So everyone's got a different, and there's no right or wrong way. It's just having an understanding that I need to relax, and this is what it means for me.
Yeah. So I guess, I mean, that's your kind of gold standard, and that's what you want to achieve every night if you were going for the perfect routine. But I guess for everyone listening, really, there would be something you'd aim for, and then something you might build towards. So there's bits you can add in, and some nights you will do this and some nights you'll do that. And I think breaking it down, there's a lot of in there that's sort of getting your body into the routine of like putting the glasses on after a certain time, the alarm going off to sort of signify this is now time to get on the slow roller coaster, turning the lights down. And then there's other things in there that are sort of preparing for the next day as part of that routine. How important is that in terms of the relaxation routine?
Again, it's different for different people, but if you're someone that if you don't prepare for the next day, you might ruminate and be thinking about that around bedtime or in bed. Oh, I haven't got this out, and I haven't got that out, I haven't packed my bag, I didn't iron my shirt, you know,
doing
I didn't get breakfast things ready.
Yeah, so,
and it's not always the case for me, because I'm not somebody who would be concerned or worried. I do it out, you know, because of the number of moving parts within my household in the morning means that I won't have time to sort of, you know, pack my bag and think about something. So I try and do it ahead of time. So everyone's different. If you're someone that will bother you, and that becomes something which you'll think about in the middle of the night or at the start of the evening when you're trying to fall asleep, then it might be worth trying to prepare and plan ahead for the next day. Like make, you know, it's 5 minutes, make my lunch, you know, fill a bottle of water up, and maybe get some clothes ready. You know, that can be for some people just a huge game changer. Even just having a little tidy up in your bedroom environment, or a tidy up in the kitchen, for instance. It sounds monotonous or not particularly exciting, but it's just something which is off of your list. It's something off, you have less mental load, and it's the amount of mental load that can, and that racing mind, that for many people can be enough to keep them awake or wake them up in the middle of the night. So preparing for the next day, I always use an analogy. I've got a few, and whether I use the car towards a roundabout or the laptop analogy, but it's like, you know, for instance, you have a laptop and it's got the screen open, it's really bright, you've got all these different apps are open and different programs.
The music's going,
open.
There's YouTube video up in the corner of a cat
exactly.
on it.
Exactly, the speakers are blaring.
You're playing solitaire over there, and messaging this one on Facebook.
The mouse is on fire.
On eBay waiting for that to finish. Yeah.
Yeah. Things are still loading or downloading, and then you have, like, the fans are going, it's quite warm, this thing, oh, you know, the battery is draining on it, or it's charging, either one. And so you have this particular device, and it's doing everything it can to be optimize, you know, and function.
Yeah.
And then you just go, okay, bedtime, and close it. And just close the laptop down. And if you've ever done that, you know, or try and close, just shut off the program, it tells you these programs aren't shut. You know, these programs aren't shut. Or when you open the laptop back up again, it just sparks to life straight away and everything's still there.
Yeah.
The fans are still going. The apps are still open. It's still processing. So, like a laptop analogy, we can't just shut that laptop down and go to bed, because everything behind the scenes is still processing, it's still working, it's still open, it's still hot and active. We need to take that laptop, close all the programs down, we need to shut everything off, turn it down, shut it down properly so that the fans go off, it starts to cool. So next time you open that laptop in the morning, for instance, in this analogy, when you wake up, that particular device can work optimally, can be at its best, because it's had that rest, it's reset, it's restored.
Yeah.
And that
actually shut down properly.
Yeah. And you don't just bang it, just turn the power off in a second. You need to take time to turn those things off. It needs to take time to cool down and process and save. And that's exactly what we need to do before we go to bed. We can't just shut the laptop and hope that that's going to be enough to give us good sleep quality and fall asleep straight away. We need to take some time to turn that all off and let it shut down and cool down before. Yeah. Otherwise, when we wake up, like the laptop, you cannot work optimally the next day unless you've had that buffer zone where you turn everything off, because essentially that time, whether it's 60, 90 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour before bed, that is you telling your brain and body that we are preparing for sleep. So you need a wind down, like you just need to wind up in the morning. You need the same. You need both the same.
Both as important as each other.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do it right at night, then you can't do it right in the morning. Because you've not started, like you say. You've opened up your laptop and you're still halfway through that game of solitaire, and that cat's still chasing that pull a string around the garden.
And if you're not, and like the analogy for a car into a roundabout, if you drive down a motorway at 70 miles an hour and there's a roundabout and you don't slow down, you just go 70 miles an hour into it, you're going to be taking off. You're gonna, like that cat, everyone bouncing around the back of the car with you. You're going to be airborne, Jigsaw style, and hopefully you're going to land the other side of it without a scratch on you. And some people do that, 70 miles an hour or 100 miles an hour into the roundabout, like for sleep, and just go, right, I'm just going to go around this roundabout and it's going to be smooth as you like. And it's not.
It's not.
I wonder why. So you need to take time, take your foot off the accelerator, start to slowly press the brake pedal, you know, check in your mirrors. You need that time to slow down before that particular hazard so that you can navigate the hazard as best as you can before carrying on again, which is essentially winding down before sleep. Sleep is going around the roundabout, and then when you wake up again, that's when you can accelerate and wind up to your day.
Build back up again and get so back at full speed.
Everyone in the car hasn't even blinked and doesn't know that you just gone around a roundabout at 75 miles an hour on rails. So that's another poor analogy. But
so we'll talk about the waking up routine in a minute, because that's another whole routine. But the going to sleep routine and the ideal we've just talked about. What are some of the things that you would say, although everyone has their own things that they do to help them relax, what are some of the top things that people do, the worst thing to do before you go to bed? I'm thinking like the amount of times you go to a restaurant and you have a cup of coffee afterwards at like 10 o'clock in the evening.
Tastes good.
Yeah, it just goes well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it just tells the brain it's the end of the meal. The meal is included. Because
I'm... Would you like coffee? Oh, sure.
Why not? That's amazing taste. There are lots of don'ts. And of course, when you get into this world, there are so many don'ts because of this and don't because of that and don't because of this. And like I said, you know, I'm a practical person and understands that saying don't and... is not always going to particularly resonate with people. Mm. It's understanding that you can enjoy caffeine and alcohol, and you can enjoy the things that you know, a Netflix binge, but just understand what the downstream consequences of that. Just understand that the timing that you do that is going to affect your health and your sleep. So you've pretty much mentioned all the don'ts, you know, just to sort of rattle them off. It would be tobacco, drugs, caffeine, alcohol, anything close to bedtime of that nature. Don't go to bed too full. Don't go to bed too hungry. Don't have large meals. Don't exercise vigorously too close to bedtime. You know, there's don't have a huge amount of light in your home, overhead, LED, laptops, phones, screens, TVs. The more light you have, of course, is not going to be helpful. So don't have too much light. And the list of don'ts does tend to drag further and further on.
It's a long list.
What is happening is when all of those don'ts are occurring, you are telling your brain that we are not ready for bed yet. We are still functioning like it's the daytime. The light that's coming through, you know, the retina, you know, and the cells at the back of our eye go into the middle of our brain. It tells us, because our brain, the clock in our side, our brain hasn't got a window out of the skull to see that it's daytime or darkness. The signals that we give it tell us whether it's daytime functioning or nighttime functioning. So if we're drinking, we're moving, you know, we're jumping up and down, we're exercising, we've got lots of light going on, it's still daytime. So there's many things which we do which are cues and triggers for our brain. And this sort of goes into the science. And let me go into that for a second, because this will help hopefully underpin all the things we've been speaking about and will speak about. Relaxation happens within our autonomic nervous system. Now, this nervous system sounds very sciencey. And essentially, we can try and break it down. Autonomic nervous system is just a place where all the automatic things happen. So our brain and body have lots of automatic responses dependent on the cues and triggers that we give it via external things or what we're doing or what we're seeing. So this
when you look at the sun and you sneeze, it always happens.
That's an automatic.
Always happens.
And the brain loves automation. It loves making automation, because the brain wants processing power for anything that might happen, which is going to affect our survival. So if it's a non-trivial, or if it's trivial, sorry, it wants to automatic. It wants to make it automatic. So we have this autonomic nervous system, which is all the automatic responses we have to different cues. So the saber-toothed tiger walks into the cave.
I forgot to say into the room. Oh, that's what that noise was earlier.
Both looking behind us. Over our shoulders.
Not again.
How can this happen 2 weeks in a row? So what we're doing is that's when the brain goes, right, automatic. You get adrenaline, you get cortisol, the bladder shuts down, we don't need that. Reproductive organs, we don't need them. What we need is blood to the extremities, to the limbs, to move, fight, flee, for instance, hunt, survive, whatever. So That's an autonomic response. Mm. And that happens in this scenario. So this autonomic nervous system has two sort of sides of it. One is, as many people have heard before, is known as the fight and flight mode.
Oh, yeah.
That's known as the sympathetic nervous system, which is a terrible name because it's not sympathetic at all. It's quite irritating. It's there for a great reason, and it's, of course, to keep us alive and survive. So automatically, a cue or a trigger happens in our life, an event, and that system kicks in and gives us an automatic response, whether it's increased blood pressure, increased heart rate, increased breathing rate. It will, you know, send blood somewhere. It will shut down things. Now, this system is great, and it keeps us alive, and it's called the fight and flight mode. But many people spend 95% of their time and day in the fight and flight mode.
Wow, okay.
And
that's
so
intense.
Yeah.
Even in the next sale, you're there.
Yeah, it's a big percentage. So this system is designed to keep us alert, and it's triggered by light, movement, exercise, worry, concern, stress, food, drink, loads of things, loads of cues and triggers that we give our brains, say to the autonomic nervous system, oh, we're still here. So we're still in this mode, fight and flight mode, and we require certain responses from this automatically by what we're doing. So if we have a poor wind down routine, we're staying in fight and flight mode. And this is your part of the autonomic nervous system. Think of it as a coin in your brain. 50p, nice fat one. Or a £2 coin, even.
£2, they're the best coins.
Yeah, the £2 coin.
Nice, heavy.
Fat coin. So think of your brain has got this coin, and it can flip. But majority of the time, whatever way's facing up is your dominant side. And most people have a fight and flight mode, face up, dominant in our brain. And what we need to do when we wind down at nighttime is to flip that coin from the fight and flight mode into the other side of the autonomic nervous system, which is known as the parasympathetic nervous system.
Oh,
terrible
okay.
name. Let's just call it the rest and digest.
Sounds like it's parachuting down from somewhere. An SAS.
Yeah, they always make these terms really helpful. I know exactly what that means by that term. So this is your rest and digest mode. So you need to flip the coin from the crazy hamster wheel into the rest and digest mode, because there is a number of automatic responses which lead to us, as it said on the tin, resting and digesting.
Okay.
And so that's when sleep happens.
The tiger's eaten us at this point, and he's now lying on the floor.
Yeah, we've slayed him.
Chilling.
We've slayed him. And over here is where we're reaping the benefits of that. No more worry. The cave's blocked up. The tiger's been slayed. And now our body can rest and digest. And we need to flip the £2 coin so that our rest and digest mode is dominant. And that's what happens at nighttime. The sun goes down, it's darkness. Our brain goes, oh, it's dark. Flip the coin, now we start to rest and digest. We turn off the chemicals and the hormones from the fight and flight mode. Mm. And we're now going to be over on the rest and digest. That's triggered by relaxing, breathing, talking, hugging, stretching. Dim light. Lighting is a huge one, which is why it's so strong as a trigger for keeping us awake or sleep. So
yeah,
this rest and digest mode needs to be activated. It needs to be triggered. It cannot be triggered if everything else is 100 miles an hour on the hamster wheel. And it doesn't happen in a second. It needs time to transition. So we need to flip the coin by triggering this side of our brain by doing a number of things, relaxing, dim light, breathing, putting the phones away. And what that does, that promotes relaxation. And we only sleep once we're relaxed. Regardless, no one can control sleep when it happens. It only happens once we're relaxed, once we've released enough melatonin hormone, because we've had this precursor.
You feel safe, and there's no tiger's exactly. going to come and get you now.
Exactly what it's all. A lot of it is down to safety. And so we need to understand that there is this autonomic nervous system, a coin inside our brain. We need to flip it as much as we can through the day so that we are very adept at flipping from rest and digest into fight and flight, into rest and digest into fight and flight. Because if we chronically stay in fight and flight mode, and that's our default setting, then we have this stress response and hormones, and it can cause cardiovascular events and lots of other long-term health implications. We need to understand that by turning the laptop off properly, by winding down properly, we then can flip into the rest and digest mode where we relax and we get great, good quality sleep, and we don't flip back until a time where we wake up. And that is essentially what relaxation is. It's just taking us from wakefulness into sleepiness. And then when you wind up in the mornings, when you wake up, you want to go from the rest and digest sleepiness into the fight and flight mode.
Back in the fight and flight mode.
Yeah, so you can spend nice, even times in it. And the more people that flip between the two, the more you can become really adept at doing it. Like it's almost like habit formation. We need it to make it automatic. You know, the brain's default setting always on that coin is to be fight and flight.
Yeah.
And if we're always in it, then the brain will keep us always in it.
That's
and
where we belong. We're always ready to fight.
Automatically just go straight to that. And it does it very well and it does it to keep us alive. But we are now thousands and thousands of years ahead and we haven't evolved too much in this amygdala, our emotional centres of our brain and where we hunt and where we're trying to survive.
Yeah.
It hasn't evolved a great deal. So the school run and someone cutting us up in a car, the brain doesn't know the difference between the saber-toothed tiger and, you know, the
fear, that focus.
The focus is just screaming in front of us on the school run when we're running late. We still get the same response. We still activate the fight and flight.
Yeah.
And so the more we can flip between the two through, you know, breathing, through stretching, through reading a book at lunchtime, whatever it is, the more we can do it through the day, then the more adept and more habitual it can become at nighttime. Because some people find it so hard to flip from one to the other.
So you'd recommend sort of training yourself to
yeah, it's probably worth
mentioning. Visualize that, in a way.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning now that relaxation is a skill. And like any skill you've ever learnt in your life, it's a journey. You're not going to be able to practice it for 5 minutes and be an expert at it. You need to practice a skill.
It's a bit like very often. Tightrope walking. You can't just do it. You're going to need to practice.
Yeah.
So it's all going to go horribly wrong.
Within 5 minutes, take the net away. The net's no longer needed. I'm now an expert.
That's it. I'm walking between.
And then 5 minutes later,
regretting
it. Yeah, it's just knowing that it doesn't have to be a chore. Just relaxation is something which you can practice. And the more you practice it, the more benefits you're going to have and the more time you can spend in the rest and digest mode. So knowing that it's a skill-based can really put people off. But like anything, you just need to be consistent. Consistency is the key here with relaxation. Just 1 minute at lunchtime or 1 minute when you're in your bed. You know, it doesn't have to be a 20-minute sort of hovering scenario of meditation.
Yeah, before. Take a moment and think, right, now I'm not going to be in this mode. I'm going
to some people need
to be relaxed.
20 minutes to relax and wind down. Some people need 1 minute. Like I said, it's all depends on what you need. And when you start trying them, go, actually, I felt great after that. I only spent 20 minutes with my phone away. I only put my phone on charge 10 minutes before my bed and I feel a lot better.
Yeah.
Everyone's different, so just try it. But always start small. You know, 1 minute, like, I don't say 90 minutes before bed, stop drinking any fluids at all and don't look at your phone. You know, let's start with, say, 20 minutes before bed, you know.
Yeah.
Because lots of people will, the brain will push back. You know, it doesn't like the change. And so when you're trying to make new neural pathways in your brain, if you say, well, we're going to go and do this gym session for an hour and a half at 9 o'clock at night, the brain's like, oh, no, we're not. And here are all the reasons and here's all the logic why we wouldn't do it, because you've done it before and it went wrong and you're only going to put yourself in harm's way and people are going to laugh at you and X, Y, and Z. Whereas if you say to the brain, I'm going to put my trainers on, I was like, okay, yeah, we can do that. Oh, yeah, we can do that. Let's go and do it. You know, I'm not going to push back on that.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is just knowing that just taking small steps where we're laying these new neural pathways in our brain, which we're trying to form a habit, we can make it easy for ourselves or quite difficult. So to start small.
Build up to it in stages. I mean, taken from this whole thing about the relaxation routine before you go to bed, it's just, it strikes me as something we always used to do when we were kids is read a book before you go to bed and you get story time, you get bath time and all the rest of it. And somehow, growing up, you just sort of forget that. And no one does it anymore.
Yeah.
But this whole routine just goes out the window at some point. And it's worth sort of, I guess, remembering what you used to do and what used to work for you when you were younger.
Exactly. I wish my mum could still come around now and tuck me in, but she won't do it. So it's... Yeah, it's worth knowing that, you know, we do it for our children. You know, we wind them down, we dim the lights, we read them a book, we give them a bath, we put them in comfortable clothing. You know, all the cues for the brain is we are now preparing for sleep. So when we put them in bed, they fall asleep reasonably quickly and they stay asleep. And that's exactly what we need to do for ourselves. But we don't, because it's modern society deems that we need to be either consuming or producing. And we don't do any if we're asleep. So we just produce, consume. Okay, I'll go to sleep because everything's done. I must wait. Oh, alarm's gone off. I'm waking up. So it's just, we need to do it for ourselves. And there's a number of different things we can do beforehand. Like we've already mentioned some of my routine, but it's just worth understanding, you know, we want to, for instance, some of the things we can do, tip strategies to help us relax at nighttime can be, say, breathing exercises. And I'm not going to give you, you know, 10 different varieties of them, but you can Google breathing exercises and try them out. So I say to people, just try them. Just try them for 1 minute and see how it feels for you. For lots of people, I say, you know, do some, for instance, box breathing, which is you breathe it like, a, you know, going through a square. You breathe in for a few seconds, 3 seconds, then you hold for 3 seconds, then you breathe out for 3 seconds, then you hold for 3 seconds.
Ah,
and you just
okay.
keep on doing that.
I was imagining beatboxing for a minute there. This is an interesting one.
Yeah. Go, or let's, why don't, how about a triangle? What about a rectangle? So it's just, box breathing is just, there's lots of different techniques out there, but it's something very helpful for many people I work with.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it has to be 4 seconds, or it has to be 3 seconds, because not everyone has a lung capacity that's similar. So just breathing.
Whatever works for you.
Long as you're breathing in and holding, because it's the holding and the breathing in, sorry, it's the holding and breathing out that activates our vagal nerve, and our vagal nerve is attached to our parasympathetic nervous system. So our rest and digest is flipped as soon as you activate the vagus nerve. And you do that when you hold your breath or you exhale. We can't do anything about breathing in. That's fight and flight. So breathe in, fight and flight. Hold and breathe out is rest and digest. So as long as we do the rest and digest, holding and breathing out more than we do the breathing in, then it's going to be helpful.
You can breathe out more than you breathe in.
Yeah.
In a weird way.
It can feel quite weird at first. But if it doesn't work for you, then just breathe in and out at a nice, slow, steady speed and just count. Breathe in one, breathe out two. Breathe in three, breathe out four. Just go to 50 or 100 or whatever you want to do. But it's breathing techniques, which is going to promote relaxation, which is really helpful. Another one would be you want to lower your core temperature before you go to bed. So hot baths or hot showers, sorry, warm to hot bath or warm or hot shower. Sounds paradoxical, but
yeah. So you get warm before you get cold?
If you warm up a body part, then your brain, your body will send heat to the extremity or to the outer layers of your skin in order to get rid of that temperature, get rid of that extra heat that you have applied, like a radiator. So that's why your skin goes all nice and pink. And it's sending all the heat out, which leaves your core temperature cooler.
Yeah.
And that is one of the main triggers for falling asleep, is our body's core temperature drops by 1 degree. And we can either help it,
right,
or we can hold
so
it off.
So all this snuggling up with multiple layers of water bottle.
If you get into bed hot, then it's going to extend the amount of time it takes you to fall asleep.
Yeah.
Because what happens, as soon as you get into bed, you just had the fire on, the dressing gown on, the radiators are on, you got in bed with some blankets, and you're laying there, and you're warm and cozy. That's when the body starts to try and reduce your core temperature, and it might take a time.
It takes longer.
It takes 15, 20 minutes, half an hour.
Dressing gowns.
So that you can fall asleep. And say, oh, I can't fall asleep. I'm struggling to fall asleep. Well, anything you can do to help reduce your core temperature before bed, which is wearing a few less layers, having a warm or hot shower or bath, is what I'd say. You don't have to do it literally, warm or hot shower, jump straight in bed. You know, it takes some time for your core temperature to drop. So within the 90-minute window, if you have a shower or a bath before, in that time, you're going to help flip into the rest and digest mode, because that's what happens. Hot or cold water. Certainly cold therapy or hot or cold shower is going to activate that system. So breathing techniques, core temperature, anything really that relaxes you. And you know what relaxes you, right? It's a book. You know, a horror movie's not going to relax you. You know, going on social
media.
Some
people might too, but you know, strange.
Yeah, absolutely. So anything that you feel that is relaxing for you, and there are so many options, and you haven't got to do 20 minutes of it, you can just do a couple of minutes of it, which means that should be accessible for all of us to help flip our brains and our bodies from the 100 miles an hour crazy mode into the calm mode,
which is called the paraglider paragliding trooper mode.
Yeah, get into the para mode.
Excellent. So we've covered loads there on the relaxation routine and the night time, how you wind down. What I'd love to do in the next episode is to go to the other side of sleep, and when we wake up,
wind up.
And our routine winding up.
Yeah.
Yes. So we'll do that next time. But Dan, thanks so much for joining us and helping us to sleep and thrive. For people to find out and get a more personal view of their own sleep, where can they go to find out more about what you do?
Okay, social media, at Sleep and Thrive Coach is on Instagram, for instance, or Sleep and Thrive on Facebook. You can find that. Website, Sleep and Thrive Coach, and as in A-N-D, sleepandthrivecoach.com or .co.uk. And there's plenty of ways they can get more information and reach out for a chat about their sleep and how we can help them.
Excellent. We will see you again next time on Sleep and Thrive.
Look forward to it.
This podcast was brought to you by Southend City Radio. For more great podcasts and radio like this, visit southendcityradio.uk.